Unique New York. Unique New York. La 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 la.
Back up the mail truck because it's time for another episode of The Stacking Benjamin Show. Hey, money fans, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and today we're throwing out the script because the star of the show is you. Lots of you wrote in with letters, and we intend to answer as many as possible on today's show without using a dartboard. But it may come into play at some point. But that's not all. We find out about the wisdom of crowds from Buzz Index's Jamie Wise, have your usual headlines, we'll throw out the Haven Lifeline to a lucky caller, and more. And here they are, two guys who struggle to figure out how to open mail, Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
I use one of those little letter openers. Actually, I have a good story about that. The first job in finance that I had was working as a bank teller long time ago. And the gal that was my training manager, she sold mutual funds and fixed annuities. And I thought that was the coolest thing in the world.
Wasn't that great?
So this was in the early mid-90s. And so she gave me this wonderful letter opener right here from Western National Life Insurance Company. And she said, this could be yours one day.
That could be the key to your success.
This is the key to my success right here. Welcome and you.
Well, yeah. Welcome to Wednesday. I am Joe Salci. I average Joe Money on Twitter. And welcome to another edition of this Basement Produced podcast. We got the drinks out. We're ready to go. And it's all you. Because today, OG, we are answering listener mail.
This is kind of a favorite thing, I think, for you and I.
You know, and I was talking to our producer, Richie, earlier. And he's like, listen, you talk about listener letters and how much you like them. You haven't done one since I've worked here. We haven't done a listener mail letter in forever, have we?
It seems like it's been a long time, yeah.
No, you know what? If it's been a long time since you've been to StackyBenjamins.com/magnified money, you want to head back there now because the best stuff out there changes once in a while, and you want to make sure that you've got the best in class when it comes to your checking account, your savings account, and your debt strategy. At Magnify Money, they have more of the products that are out there than any other place on earth. Over 92% of the things that are out there available on Magnify Money. So whether you're trying to refinance that mortgage, you're looking for a car loan, you're hoping to get the right credit cards in place, you can pay them off and have 0% on your current cards, or maybe you pay off your credit cards every month and you're looking to finally get the rewards thing going. StackingBenjamins.com/magnify money. And the place that's number one whenever they compete at Magnify Money, wherever they compete, is SoFi. That's spelled S-O-F-I. And you head to StackingBenjamins.com/SoFi. Know what you're going to find? That they're the leader in marketplace lending, and they'll help you with your student loans, personal loans, and your mortgage. Here's how it works. You point your browser. I all of a sudden became Canadian. My browser. Here's how it works. You point your browser over to stackybenjamins.com/SOFI, and it'll ask you which type of help you're looking for. And from that point, you fill in a few details about you. And like our friend Dan Macklin over at SoFi says, in a few seconds in most cases, you'll know everything about how they can work with you. You'll be able to pick from different terms. Check out the interest rates on variable and fixed rate options to get the ball rolling. In fact, it's so easy. MagnifyMoney.com lists their fine print rating as A+, meaning it's all super easy to understand. You're looking for lower rates and a good partner, and guess who they're looking for? A new member to help. For your mortgage, student loans, personal loans, head to StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI, and they'll throw in $100 if you use our link for your student loan refinance or your next personal loan. That's StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI. Great show today, your letters. But first, we've got some incredible headlines, so let's get this party started.
Hello, darlings. And now, it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's headlines.
Remember that game you played when you were a kid? The one for you, one for me, one for you, one for me, you know?
Oh, I was thinking about Spin the Bottle, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a different game. Totally different.
All by myself. I always won.
You played Spin the Bottle by yourself?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Very romantic. You still do that from time to time, don't you?
Hey-o.
advisor to plead guilty to cherry picking investments in a $1.3 million scheme. I'm still trying to get my head around this. This comes to us from financialplanning.com, and Tobias Salinger wrote this piece. Mr. Salinger says a former advisor agreed to plead guilty to bilking at least 30 clients out of $1.3 million by sticking them with losing investments and, get this, and keeping the winners for himself, according to the Department of Justice.
Nice.
You know, why do you have clients? You have clients, OG, so you can just give them the loser investments and keep the good ones for you.
Yeah, I don't exactly know how you'd even do this, right? I mean, unless you had custody of the accounts.
It's exactly the deal. He was making the trades himself, and they say that during the length of his fraud, Breton shuttled more than 200 unprofitable trades from his personal accounts into those of his clients, according to the SEC. Breton bought thousands of shares in companies like cybersecurity firm Fortinet, Intel subsidiary Altera, cosmetic store chain Ulta Beauty, and fast food chicken restaurant chain El Pollo Loco. This whole idea is El Pollo Loco. SEC investigators said the commission found that he allocated the trades hours or even minutes after the earnings report. So what he'd do, he would buy the positions just before the earnings report. He would wait for the earnings report. And if the earnings report was bad and the stocks went down, he gave them to his clients. If they were good.
Oh, guys, too bad. Made another bad call.
Sucks. Can you, like, number one, this whole idea of having your advisor just to trade enough. If you start getting paper from your advisor that they're trading your account all the time, there's definitely some questions that need to be asked.
Well, I think the biggest thing is with this is the custody issue. I mean, if he had the money in a reputable third-party custodian, right? We use TD Ameritrade, but other companies are out there. Fidelity and Schwab are a couple of the other big ones, but there's even some smaller ones that are still reputable. It almost is impossible to, I can't even figure out in my mind how I could do that, even if I wanted to, not that I want to, but it doesn't seem like it would actually, I think the custodian would make it almost impossible. So if your advisor says, no, it's good, we're going to put your money in my checking account, I promise I'll be good, that might be a red flag number one.
Yeah. Tough stuff there for some investors.
And of course, he doesn't have the $1.3 million that he bilked people out of. It's not like he's sitting safe and secure in a savings account earning 0.5% interest. It's spent on Mercedes leases and fancy trips to Spain, I bet.
That just makes your stomach sink. And for our second headline, Jamie Wise from Buzz Indexes is back. Welcome back, man. We missed you.
Hey, it's good to be back, Joe. How are things?
Well, it's fantastic now that you're here. You know, property values always go up when Jamie Wise comes down to the basement. But let's talk about this because it's been an interesting month in the market. The market was on a tear, and the Buzz Index has also been on a tear, but not quite as much as the market. Give us the numbers first.
Sure. Rising tide lifting all ships here in February, that's for sure. Buzz was up about 2.8% during the month, which is a little less than 1% below the S&P and about 1% below the iShares MTUM Momentum ETF. Again, stocks on a tear, investor euphoria, but we're seeing some different insights in Buzz, which may lead us to think it may be coming to maybe not an end, but at least slowing down a little bit.
Yeah, that's what all that I've been reading about. And of course, I'm reading on the same places where Buzz is gleaning their index algorithm stuff from, right? People online, stories that are being shared on Twitter, on Facebook, on social media, all talking about how we're all waiting for the other shoe to drop. And it looks like that's kind of the rotation you're getting with the Buzz Index too, which maybe should scare us a little bit.
I don't know if we need to be scared, but I think it might be time for a bit of a pause, right? And I think where we see that most clearly is in the financial sector. So that has been the one sector since the election that has really just outperformed everything else. I mean, a huge run in the largest cap U.S. financials, whether it's Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley. And we're seeing some of that sentiment wane. We certainly picked up on it following the election. The weightings of financials increased in our index. We added more names to the index. But very interestingly, in February, two names dropped out, and that's Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley.
Which have been huge high flyers, just absolutely huge for the index.
Absolutely. And I think the same, you know, we're reading and listening to the same things that you're reading. We're just listening to maybe millions of more conversations. And I think people are starting to feel that we're certainly closer to the top now that we've had this big run, now that these stocks are up 30 plus percent in the last few months. maybe it's time to take a pause. Let's see what the new president can deliver to the economy. Maybe all of the financial regulation changes might just be priced into these stocks. And so we're getting a little cautious, at least in that sector. We are still seeing some positive trends with respect to Trump's policies in other places, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the rotation, because some of the rotation seems to be a little bit on the defensive side, which is, you know, part of where all your commentary is coming from.
Yeah, we added an old economy name that is likely to benefit if some of Trump's policies go through, and that's U.S. Steel. And it came into the index in February at a max weight, 3% within the index. And we all know the story behind U.S. Steel, right? Trump is very much a Buy America sort of strategy here in what he plans to deliver into the market here. If he is successful, of course, there's going to be a huge need for the products that U.S. Steel makes so that we can do these big infrastructure spends and the big infrastructure plays. I think people are believing that he will be able to accomplish that. He's going to build walls. He's going to build pipelines. He's going to come through with his infrastructure. And that leads to more investor optimism when it comes to U.S. Steel.
When it comes to steel, right. What are some of the other names that you're seeing now that are either bigger weights than they were last month, Jamie, or some of the names that are surprises that are new?
Well, we have Macy's coming into the index again. And of course, Macy's has been in the news recently because it is the subject of a potential takeover from Hudson's Bay Company, a Canadian-based retailer. And people are really excited about that. There's been nothing announced, which allows it to still continue to be in, you know, a part of our index and no formal announcement. But I think people recognize not only the value that Macy's could bring under a bigger umbrella, but more importantly, maybe the value in the real estate holdings that they have.
And it's interesting, once again, owning real estate, a little bit more conservative position than some of the high flyers that we saw like back in October, November.
Yeah, there's that transition from maybe some of the new economy high flyers into these old economy stocks that would really benefit from Trump policies, right? Buy America, America First, America Manufacturing, all of the places that, you know, were very popular through the early and mid 90s and then were overtaken by the tech craze of the last 20 years. Are slowly finding better and better sentiment as time goes by.
Well, it's funny. The last time you and I talked when the Buzz Index trailed the Momentum Index or trailed the S&P 500 was right around the election. And that ended up proving to be exactly what you and I thought it was, Jamie, which was kind of like the crowd being a little bit ahead. So I'm very excited to see what we've got 30 days from now when you and I talk again. The index is the Buzz Index. You can buy it as ticker symbol BUZ. And that's on the, which exchange is that on? Is that the NASDAQ, the American?
No, it's NYSE Arca, the New York Stock Exchange listed.
Yeah, cool. Ticker symbol BUZ. And I also need to say that I own the Buzz Index and I've been, Jamie, incredibly happy with, of course, like everybody would be when they see the returns that they've had. Of course, that's no promise of future returns, but it's just a disclaimer that I do own shares in the Buzz Index. Thanks for hanging out again, Jamie.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us. Looking forward to next time.
Thanks again to Jamie Wise for stopping by. You know, OG, when you start to see the wisdom of the crowd here kind of slowing down the risk level, buying some of the old technology, you start to wonder if how many more legs. And I know you don't play that game. I know you don't. You don't play that game, but
homie, don't play that.
Another indicator pointing to maybe the party's finally over. We've been saying that for years, so who the heck knows?
I haven't been saying anything for years.
I guess I'm saying our headlines have been saying that for years.
Yeah. I use a more antiquated approach when everybody I talk to starts talking about how they're really upset that their portfolios are only up 20% and not 22. That's, to me, performance mania. So we got a ways to go yet.
And it's time for that part of the show that everybody loves, the time when we have this. Check out the stack of mail, OG. That is
and half of those aren't bills.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. And we're going to get through as many of these as we possibly can. Let's see what we can do. We start off with Gary. Gary was talking about when you and I a couple months ago were talking about simplification of the tax code and about how simplification of the tax code might help and about how there's all these different retirement plans at workplace retirement plans. Mm-hmm. Might be easier if we just had just one. But the problem, remember, the problem was the government was talking about maybe another tax.
Yes, tax adding another plan.
Right. And we're like, we already have enough of these. Gary chimes in on this by saying, buying into the government encouragement to simplify the tax advantage savings vehicles is a good way to get the plans that are currently advantageous to the taxpayers. Roth plans, I'm looking at you, distributed to less advantageous plans, government managed mutual funds with mandatory government bonds, especially the negative interest rate ones. He says, thanks for entertaining me and making sure I learn nothing. He's saying that if we try to simplify it, he thinks that that it might get worse because the government's in charge of it, might get worse.
Well, I think you and I talked about this maybe offline, that that was my conspiracy theory, that the purpose of these was to make sure that there was a steady flow of money into this ever-increasing debt pool that we have to pay off the 30-year debt with, you know what I mean? And so we've got these, all these small $15,000 plans, because that I think was the cutoff on them. All this like teeny tiny money, people can't, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't like it. What did Ronald Reagan say? The most fearful words are, we're from the government and we're here to help.
Right.
You know?
Right. Right. But I haven't seen anything out of the government about simplification. I mean, people talk about simplification, but all we've seen is another new plan. We'll leave the other plans the way they are, and we'll just add another one. And our point was it that—
Get rid of all of them.
Yeah,
have one.
Yeah, that government intervention, he says, well, if you do that, you'll probably end up with a substandard one. I think that's above our pay grade. Oh, gee, I don't know that we know which way that would go. It just, simplification still sounds like a great thing for me.
Well, if that were a vote, I would vote for that, yes.
Next question comes to us from Iman. Iman says, howdy guys, I'm going to be graduating college soon, and I have somehow managed to save up $20,000. How do you go to college and save $20,000? Yes.
Dude's he was the cool kid. Nerd.
Yeah, or he's got a job on the side. I'll be moving to...
No, I'm just kidding. That's awesome.
I'll be moving to a new location for work. Well, there it is. But I'm not really expecting this to be my permanent work location, maybe 2 to 4 years. If you were in my shoes, what would be a good way to invest the money to make it work for me? I had a roommate suggest saving up early and buying a house, which I could eventually rent out if I move away. Or do you think that money would do better in the stock market? Let me know what you think, or if you see some other good ways to invest. Thanks. So good question. Thanks for the letter.
Yeah, it really depends on what the money's for. If it's going to be just longer term investment savings, then I believe that the, you know, equity markets are going to provide a pretty decent rate of return over the next, 40 or 50 years of your working life. If it's money that you're going to use for a house down payment, but maybe not in 2 years or 3 years, then you might want to consider having it be in something a little bit more secure, dare I say, bonds or of cash.
Dude, you keep violating your own little rules there.
No, I don't violate my rules. I've always said that if you need the money in the next 5 years, it's got to be safe and secure. But I don't know that I agree with the whole idea of let's buy a house to be able to rent it when we leave. Because what if you move to Seattle and now you get a new job in Miami, Florida, and you've got this one property stuck in Seattle? I mean, that's a tough road to hoe. You don't want to do that.
You have to remember when you buy individual properties that money is a liquid. You cannot pull off just the bathroom, you know, to go cash that piece of the house in. It's an all or nothing thing, and you don't get your money back right away. You have to, you know, go through the whole process of putting it on the market, negotiate with a seller. So illiquidity is a problem there. Now, the only reason I say that is that I actually like the whole rent out the house idea, but people get into those things, OG, without... completely forgetting that liquidity when you buy individual houses is not something that's easy. Every investment has a downside. I think liquidity is a huge downside for that. Whereas an example with stocks, the downside is that you can sell them all day long. They're very liquid, but you know, the price can
There's
be
volatility,
like an elevator.
Right?
It can go up and down and up and down very, very quickly versus real estate. So if I'm buying real estate with $20,000, I think I'm buying a REIT.
Right. And I guess in the bigger picture, if your total savings account is $20,000, I mean, what a great spot to be in from a cash reserve standpoint and starting your longer term savings from that point and saying this is now my cash reserve that I'll never, ever, ever have to get into. And now you get your job and now you start saving money in your 401k or your Roth and that sort of thing. And now you never have to worry about getting in debt, you know, no consumer debt. You don't have to worry about car debt, any of that sort of stuff. You've got a great cash reserve already.
Yeah, that is the ticket, man. If I would have had a cash reserve at Iman's age, How great would that have been? Because then you can, and then you can also be really aggressive with your investments, right?
I mean, tons of flexibility.
You know, you've got the $20,000 sitting there. So whenever I make an investment pick, I can have it pushed to the floor, just hammer the risk on the investments.
Now, when I was in college, I had like a big, one of those big Jimmy John's cups full of quarters and whatever else change I happened to pick up off the street. Do you think that that is considered a cash reserve?
Absolutely. Yes.
Oh, okay, cool.
Maybe not sufficient cash reserve, but a good start.
But I got the laundry done.
That's right.
And you can get a can of SpaghettiOs if you wanted.
And see, you could buy the spicy SpaghettiOs because you know you got the money in the...
You probably like the ones with little hot dogs in them too.
I used to when I was like seven, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Gross.
Next question comes to us from Dan. Dan said that we had a woman on our show recently at a website for children to allow them to allocate a money gift into three portions. One is investment, one is saving for a special item they want, and a third to go to charity. What was that website? That's called ISO. And ISO, that was Tanya Van Court. As back in December, we talked to Tanya about ISO. Really cool idea for kids, OG, to help them get an idea of what it means to set a goal and then to start saving for it. And then you can give it to grandma, grandpa, aunts, uncles, friends. So at birthday parties, instead of getting another thing that the kids aren't going to use, they can put money into the kid's ISO account. And then the kid gets money toward the new bike or whatever the heck it is they're buying. So cool. That new Nintendo contraption, you know? Yeah.
The new old one. I'm still trying to get the new old one. Right. Mrs. OG texts me a picture. Hey, look, it's for sale at Amazon. I'm like, did you buy it? No. Did you want me to? Yes. Oh, it's gone. Sorry.
Well, it's going to be on sale even more. I remember my parents buying me a stereo that had like an 8-track player on it because it was on sale back when
had an 8-track player. I always think of you and I like kind of in the same generation, and then sort of you say that
until I say stuff like that, and then you're like, yeah.
And then I'm like, yep.
Yeah.
The only 8-tracks I remember were from my dad. He had Alabama on 8-track.
I remember I was like 12 and I knew that my parents had gotten a good deal on that thing because nobody listened to 8-tracks anymore. Like they were around and they gave me two 8-tracks. They gave me these KTEL 8-tracks and people nice. My age. Do you remember KTEL?
No, yeah. I don't even know what that is.
All right. KTEL's those things like, you know, Yes, This Is Pop or whatever, where it's all the top artists.
Oh, okay. Yeah, cool.
Yes. So KTEL made those back in
those days. There's three people. Right, so it was a pretty quick album.
Yeah, we took our horse and buggy down to the record store and or the 8-track store. Next question comes to us from Bill. Bill says he heard about our show from Kiplinger, and he's glad that he did. So somebody who read about us from Kiplinger, still can't believe that. For those people who don't know what we're talking about, Kiplinger called this year's show the best personal finance podcast in their December issue, best personal finance podcast 2016.
Super cool, huh?
Still can't figure that out because usually we got to slip somebody a 10, OG, and we don't know anybody over there. So
yeah,
not sure where they made that mistake.
All right.
He says, lots of fun and engaging topics. Thanks to you, OG, and your guests. His question centers around retirement. He's almost there and expects to retire this year at age 64. Portfolio is about $2.4 million, of which all but $700,000 is in tax-deferred retirement accounts. He's about 60-40 between stocks and bonds with a broad array of actively managed funds, exchange-traded funds, index funds, and individual stocks and bonds. He pays a 1% fee to Schwab for investment advice. While he's knowledgeable about investments, he likes the oversight and recommendations from a professional. He'd like our thoughts on paying for investment advice, how complex or simple an investment portfolio should be, and finally, how to make the change to a different system if you so advise. Thanks for the insight, Bill. Good question. Good question from Bill there, huh?
Yeah, a lot of moving parts there. Congratulations on your pending retirement. Light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a speeding train. So that's good.
That is good. That's always a plus. Yeah. I see the light. Bam.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's cool. So, where to start with this? Just kind of rattled off a whole bunch of different things there. I didn't like the concept of actively managed funds. So I heard that dropped in there. Typically, that means that you're paying a little bit more in costs for those types of investments and those. That's kind of the conventional method of investing, right? Like that says, hey, I can beat the stock market and I can pick better stuff than the next guy. So you should pay me a little bit more to do that. history has suggested and academic research has suggested that that's really not possible to do. And it's certainly not possible to predict in advance who's going to do that, despite the fact that there are people who do outperform. So actively managed funds, I could take or leave those. ETFs, individual stocks, it sounds like quite a smattering of different things. My concern would be a very rare thing, but we do see it from time to time, would be over-diversification, and which is basically saying you have so much of everything that you really own one thing. And you're paying a whole bunch of money, both in internal costs, trading costs. The 1% thing to the advisor is not off the reservation. That's give or take par for the course, I would say, for a $2 million portfolio, about 1%. Maybe a skosh high, but okay. But what do you really have? If you've got all these different positions, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different positions and thousands of positions, you really have one position. You have the market. So why do you need to have, you know, 20 different line items?
I think regardless of the number of line items from where I sit, if you understand what you're doing, if you understand, in other words, you don't have to understand every single little piece, but you get what your strategy is and you know why your strategy, why you're doing what you're doing, I think your advisor's doing a good job. And I think the number of line items then is irrelevant to the entire equation. It's, do I have a strategy? Do I know what the strategy is? And is the strategy working?
When my advisor, are we executing on it?
Yeah, when my advisor and I get together, are we meeting the benchmarks that we set out to hit? And if we're not meeting the benchmarks, is it because of the fact that the strategy's bad, which usually isn't the case? Usually it's the fact that we're jumping from strategy to strategy, or we just plain don't have one. I mean, there's advisors out there that are managing money, and you get together with them and all they want to do is talk about the stock market. The one piece of the plan you can't control is the one piece that the advisor wants to talk about. And that's not being an advisor. That's a guy who's, or a woman who's trying to be the Oracle at Delphi. And I think that a lot of people think that that's what an advisor's job is, by the way. Now I'm going to get up on my soapbox here for a second.
I like this. Keep going, baby. You're doing good.
People think that what an advisor is supposed to do, an advisor is supposed to go out and beat the pants off the S&P 500, and they're supposed to show you the magic investment, the genie that's going to beat everything next year. That's not what an advisor does. An advisor is a human being like you. They don't know where the next hot investment's going to be, but they do know statistics. They do know how to make sure that you don't run afoul of statistics that historically have been in your favor. So in other words, they know the casino part. They know the part of the player. They understand the market dynamic and they understand your goal. So then they can help you put together and maintain a portfolio that's going to consistently be on that train. And then the bigger part, and this is a big part for me, is that they're protecting your blind spots, because every investor has blind spots that they're not looking at, that they totally just for whatever. I have always had coaches during my career. My coaches are always people that think differently than me. My personal coach, my number one coach who I've had forever, she is a human being that a lot of people do not like. They do not like her. My wife does not like her. She's not always a super nice person. She just isn't. She can be very sour. And don't get me wrong, if she's listening to this, I absolutely love her because she thinks about the world in a completely different way than I do. I tend to be way overly optimistic all the time. And so she's got my back with the pessimism that I really need about, you know, what if you step in this, you know, what happens if this happens? She's got that. That's what a good advisor does. And so I tell Bill, if you've got that, if you've got somebody who's protecting your downside, who's playing the statistics, has put together a strategy for you or with you, which is a better phrase, that the two of you understand together where they're going and you've got a roadmap, I think your advisor's doing a great job.
I think the biggest piece, what you just said about 30 seconds into your rant, was your investments have to serve a purpose, right? Beating the S&P is not serving a purpose. And what you hit on and you kind of glossed over was the plan. Right. So your advisor should have, and you should have with you, the plan of what the purpose of all of this is for. You know, you've accumulated it. And now what's the purpose of it? It's to provide a legacy, is to provide a lifetime of income. And then you back into, now what kind of investments do I hold that give me the highest likelihood of success on that plan. So the investment served the plan. And that's what I kind of always come back to. We don't just invest money just to invest it. We have to invest it to an end. Like, what are we trying to do? Well, this is lifetime sustainable income for, we've got 30 years. Here's what the portfolio should look like that gives us the highest likelihood of that. And if you've got, like Joe said, if that's what you have, then you're doing a fantastic job. The individual stuff doesn't matter as much as that stuff.
Yeah. Yep. You know? Totally agree. The next question comes to us from David. David actually does have a question. He's a comedy. He said he wants to share with us his strategy for saving money. I really like this one, OG. He says, you know, a lot of adults are now buying those coloring books and coloring apparently for stress relief. We went into a coffee shop recently, and there were these people in their, I'm going to say their mid-60s, man and woman. And they had a cup of coffee and they were both coloring. And I'm looking over at first. I'm like, really? Really, you're coloring? And then I look at what they're doing, and it was beautiful. Like, it was it was fantastic. And there was part of me that went, yeah, Dick, can I sit down and do that too? It was pretty well.
I bought Mrs. OG a book that's kind of like that. The title of the book is called Mommy Drinks Because You Cry.
That's so bad.
It's like awesome. It's a coloring book. Yeah, it's really kind of
like
funny.
That Samuel Jackson, go the f*** to sleep, right?
Yeah.
I create a world map like the game Risk. And when I get closer to a financial goal, I color in that section of the continent. He says, I'm trying to save for my kids' college education, put myself on a monthly budget, and hope to complete it another year in 10 months. It's just that it gives me a visual goal on what to focus. So whenever he gets closer to the goal, he colors in a little more. So he's taking over the world. He's dominating the world, OG.
Think about how everybody uses that, right? My kids' school is having a fundraiser and they've got a big thermometer that they're trying to fill up with donations, right? You go to your church and then you're trying to build a new church building and they've got a big bar chart of how they're doing toward their goal. That's a great idea. It's motivating.
Next question comes to us from Joe. Joe says, hey, Joe and OG, I'm looking for some insight. I'm 36 years old and my income precludes me from contributing to a Roth IRA. And what that means, OG, is that he makes too much money for a Roth IRA contribution. I currently have a traditional IRA at Vanguard, which I've been contributing to from 2012 to 2015. He says approximately $24,000 total, of which these were all deductible contributions except for 2015, because as of 2015, he's been able to contribute to his employer's 401k plan, $18,000 per year in 2015, 2016, and also is going to keep doing that in 2017. He'd like to do a Roth conversion and make traditional non-deductible contributions to a traditional IRA for 16 and 17 and beyond, then recharacterize it, do what we've talked about not calling a backdoor Roth IRA, do a backdoor Roth IRA conversion. Given that I already have a traditional IRA, how would this be best achieved? Is it too late to do this for my 2016 $5,500 contribution as I've not made this yet? After doing some research, I don't think I can open a new separate traditional IRA at Vanguard or somewhere else, then shortly thereafter recharacterize it to a Roth. Any and all suggestions are appreciated. First of all, I'll tell you, we are not accountants. We're not CPAs. So tax advice is at your own risk. This is not advice at all. We're just going to play. How do you do this?
Well, I think it's important, first of all, to use the right terminology. So he said a couple times recharacterize, and that is a different thing altogether. What you're trying to do is a conversion. A recharacterization is when you've done a conversion and you're trying to undo it. So we want to use the right terminology. So you're right. You can't do a conversion on just a portion of your IRA and say, well, I want this to be tax-free. The IRS aggregates all of your IRAs. So let's say, for example, he says the balance is about $24,000. Let's say of that $24,000, $10,000 was deductible contributions, right? So he mentioned that he had some of those deductibles and he wanted to convert $10,000 into a Roth. Well, the IRS just does the formula and says, well, $10,000 of $24,000 is roughly 40%. So if you converted, you know, a $10,000 portion of that portfolio, 40% of that would be a taxable conversion. The other 60% wouldn't. So it's just very straightforward. And you're right. That's where people get into trouble, where they say, well, I'll just convert this portion of my IRA. No, you can't do that. You can't cherry pick the money. But the good news is that it's a relatively small IRA balance. So the tax implications on this conversion are not that great. contrasted to how long you have the opportunity to do the backdoor Roth IRA deal. So that's the comparison, is do you want to do that now and pay the piper and then have the ability to do the Roths? Now, the other part you said, can I do a conversion for 2016? No. So conversions have to be done in a year. You can't extend them, but you can contribute to last year's money. So a lot of moving parts there, but I think I hit all of them.
Yeah, good stuff. Thanks for the question, Joe. Next question comes to us from Becky. Becky says she has an old 401k that she left with her previous employer, $250,000, which is managed in a 401k by Aon Hewitt. I also have a 403b with the current employer 2 to 3 years from retiring, but don't anticipating needing the funds until the required minimum distributions come out. Let's talk for a second before we finish Becky's question about required minimum distributions, because a lot of people don't know about this. They know you can put money in, OG, but they don't realize that there's a date when the government's going to come knocking and you have to start taking money out.
Yeah, most people are familiar with the 59.5 component of your IRAs and 401ks that says if you take it out before then, you have to pay a penalty unless under some really off-the-wall circumstances. But the other side of that equation is the age 70.5. So the year in which you turn 70.5, and of course, why does the IRS pick 70.5? Why can't it be 70 or 71? Is this anyway? So the year you turn 70.5, there's a formula you have to apply to your qualified plan balance. So your IRAs and 401ks and things like that. You apply this formula to it, and that is how much you have to take out of the plan that year. Now, you don't have to spend it. You can put it right back into another investment account. But basically what they're doing is they're saying, you need to take some money out and pay the piper. It's time to pay taxes on this money. If it's a 401k or a 403b, you've never paid taxes on it ever. And the IRS says, once you reach 70.5, it's time to collect.
Yeah, and I want to do, we often do this, OG, when we're answering a question, we'll gloss over a little piece and then somebody will write in and say, well, you forgot to say da-da-da-da-da. And we just don't have time to talk about all those things, but I will clarify something. When you said the 59.5 rule, if it's a 401k and the company will let you do it, you can sometimes get the money out of the 401k without penalty.
Well, yeah, that's a rollover, you know. Is that what you're talking about? Or are you talking about age 55 and separation?
I'm talking about 55 and separation from service.
Yeah, there's, let's just say that there's at least a bullet point or two of ways to get money out of your retirement plan before age 59.5 without a 10% penalty.
I could just see those letters coming. Hey, you forgot to say. No, we didn't really forget to say.
I could take money out at 38 if I do an SEPP. Anyways.
Okay, back to Becky's
letter. 70.5.
So she says she doesn't need the money until that 70.5 date. Folks tell me I should roll both into Vanguard. Not sure what factors to consider or how to look at performance before doing this. Don't have a problem doing this, but want to make sure it's a wise decision. Should I roll the old now or wait and do both when I retire? How do I know what funds to invest in? Just go with Vanguard recommendation to get account established and then adjust based on annual performance? Thanks for the question, Becky. And I'm laughing because people do this all the time. Oh, you're getting ready to retire? Yeah. Roll to Vanguard. What do you know about me? Nothing, but I know you should roll to Vanguard. So what should I do at Vanguard? What like Becky's asking, what should I do at Vanguard? Yeah. What should I?
What, once it's there, now what do I do?
I'll just give it to Vanguard. Give all your money to Vanguard. Everybody else a crook. That's fine. And by the way, that's not a rip on Vanguard. And Vanguard is a fine place to roll your money. I don't think people that gave her that advice had a malicious intent, OG. It just is so unbelievably incomplete. It drives me crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, back to Bill's question from before, right? Well, what's the purpose of the money?
Right.
Just because we don't need it until 70.5 doesn't mean that we need it all at 70.5. Maybe she does. Maybe she says at 70.5, I will withdraw the entire balance and buy a Ferrari. Cool. That's a goal, right? Maybe not the soundest long-term retirement strategy, but it's okay. So,
but if she bought a podcast or a Ferrari, that's a sound goal.
That would probably land one of us in jail, but yeah.
But it's still the best goal. But anyway, I'm sorry. It'd
still be a cool goal. Yeah. It'd be cool to have the goal. Now, implementing the goal is a whole different thing. Right. No, I mean, it really boils down to the plan component of it. What's the purpose of the money? So how should I invest it based on what your goals are? It's impossible to answer this question to what you're saying. Vanguard is a fantastic place to put your money as long as you know what you're doing for it. Please do not reposition your investments based on performance every year. That is the definition of buying high and selling low. That is what all those Dalbar studies that say investors make really bad emotional decisions. That's what that's all about, is that they look at their statement, their 401k statement or Vanguard statement or 403b statement, and look and say, oh, well, shoot, this one's up 22% and this one was down 18%. I should take the down 18% and put it in the plus 22. Yay.
Becky didn't say this specifically, but based on her question about how do I know what funds to invest in, Becky seems to me to be the person that I saw a lot, which is that, you know, she's getting close to retirement, OG. She's got all of these choices. I mean, you've got a phenomenal number of choices out there to choose from, and you get deer in the headlights. But what's cool is if people start the way that you're talking about, I start off with a goal. That gives me when I'm going to need the money, and it's going to tell me how much money I need at a certain date. And sure, it's not going to be 100% right, but it's going to be directionally correct. Once I have that, then I know the time frame. Then I know what I need that money to grow to or how I need to preserve it. Then two things become apparent. 90% of the investments out there take themselves out of the running immediately. And what's cool is instead of this deer in the headlights of 50 bajillion investments to choose from, I get to choose between a sliver now of investments, and it becomes a lot clearer what I should do. And by the way, once I do that and I know what type of investments, then I can see what investment houses historically have done the best in that arena, because different investment houses are good at different things. And then I choose the investment house and I choose the actual investment. So then I say, oh, look at it, it's Vanguard. And Vanguard has this thing and I need that in my portfolio, and I go there. And the second thing that becomes readily apparent is the tax strategy, right? Because you're going to see a lot of people who will recommend that Becky, you know, the Vanguard investment one is, hey, go put it in a place with really low fees, which is fantastic. We don't see that one as much. The number one place where people put IRAs is inside annuities. That's super high fees. And that is the number one place people put IRAs. And it generally is not for anything that helps you. It's generally an ugly thing. And, you know, there's a tax component to that. There's a safety component to that, where it could be right for a tiny sliver of people, but do all that work first and you're going to avoid all those missteps.
Yeah. Yep. This is a great example of have a goal, have a plan, work the plan. And you got to do it in those orders. Otherwise, you end up with chaos, right?
Good news, bad news here, OG. The good news is we got through quite a few letters, and man, was that fun. Bad news
is, can we do one more? We got enough time for one more. Let's do one more.
I was going to say the bad news is, well, even if we do one more, we're going to have to do this again very soon.
Oh, okay. So well, then who's the lucky winner if we do one more, and then maybe we'll not do it.
Yep. We got one more, and we also have the Haven Lifeline coming up later in the show. Here's our last one. Our last one comes to us from Candace. Kind of makes the same point that Jamie Wise made earlier, talking about the wisdom of crowds, saying maybe there's bad stuff on the horizon. Candace seems to feel the same, OG. She says, if I think a recession is likely in the next year or two, what's the safest investment or holding place for my money in the meantime? Thanks, Candace. Now, I know, hey, you asked for it.
Now, Candace doesn't get hers answered. Stay tuned.
Candace knows, maybe Candace doesn't know, that OG doesn't like to play that game. But let's say that that we're in the middle of a recession now, OG, and you just want to hold your money in a safe spot. What would a safe spot be?
I can't in good conscience answer this question. What is it? Well, my conscientious objector. That's what I am. If you find yourself in the middle of a recession and you decide that now is the time to change your investment strategy, the recession wins.
What, you mean you're too late?
Yeah. I mean, if it's March of 2009 all over again, right? And the market's down 46%, and then you decide now's the time to change, right? This is a bad time to do that. Rebalancing and dollar cost averaging are your greatest friends in this case. If you're trying to prognosticate, which is what she's doing, right? Saying, I think it's on the horizon. Where's the safest place? Cash is the safest place, in all seriousness.
Yeah. And it depends also, Candace, on how long you think it's going to go. I'll answer this question too by kind of aping off of what OG's saying, which is that, remember, when you play this game, you got to be right twice, right? If she jumps out now before the market, I mean, we're taping this a little early, and maybe the market's gone through the floor in the last 2 days. Hope not. But if it hasn't,
I hope so. Great opportunity to buy more.
Well, but my point is, if it hasn't, what if she's jumping off way too early? right?
Yeah.
And if,
yeah.
So she's wrong, like everybody's been wrong. Our friend Mark Meadows in Chicago, Mark sent me a thing on Twitter talking about Henry Blodgett, you know, the famous Business Insider guy that runs mm-hmm. Business Insider. Henry Blodgett has been a stock analyst forever and ever. Really smart guy. They went back through a series of tweets from 2014 saying the party's over, 2015 oh, yeah. saying the party's over, Blodgett calling the end of the party in 2016 over and over. Like Blodgett's continually called the end of the party for the last 4 years.
Well, Peter Lynch has a great quote. I mean, one of the most well-known portfolio managers in history ran Fidelity's Magellan Fund, which was kind of the bell cow for them for a long time. His quote was something along the lines of, more money is lost in people trying to guess the next decline than actually in the decline. Yeah. Because you're missing out on, you know, in 2014, what was the Dow at? 15, 16,000, and now it's at 21 and some change. I mean, shoot, this time last year, right, we were just coming off of the worst 6 weeks in history. You probably remember all of the commentary. This is the end. This is how the world ends. The worst 6 weeks to open the hit year ever, 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 ever. Since then, the market's up like 30%, including dividends.
Well, look at all the people since the election. The election's up what? Or the market's up what? 16% since the election.
Yep.
And, you know, a lot of people jumped off the wagon right after the election happened. We keep reading about that. So she's got to be right then. She also has to be right when it hits the bottom. Like she's got to
back in.
Yeah. And what inevitably happens is there's people that are still out now from 2008, right?
I just said this past week to clients. I said, there are people waiting for the market to recover from 2008.
Yeah. Yeah.
You go, how's that possible? It is. They are.
Because in the media, you continually hear about how bad the economy's been since 2008.
Yeah.
You
know? Terrible.
Yeah. It's all bad, except the stock market just continues to go
north. And think about it from a logical standpoint. So let's say that you get it right, right? So you get out and the market goes down by half. So the Dow's at 12,000. Do you got the stones at that point to say, you know what sounds like a really good idea? The market's down 50%.
Get back in.
9 months. I should take all of my retirement money that's in cash, right? It's been safe and secure. And I should buy stocks. That's what I should do right now. Really hard to do.
That said, though, OG, I will give you know, you said cash. If you think it's going to be extended 2 to 3 years, Ginnie Mae's. Ginnie Mae's are not a cash substitute, but Ginnie Mae will spike up your interest rate a little bit. You'll get these little Ginnie Mae dividends, and the volatility historically has been very low. Now, that doesn't mean it can't go down. And during the housing crisis, Ginnie Mae's right in the middle of that, right? So yeah. Ginnie Mae went down a ton, and there's a lot of really conservative investors, but Ginnie Mae is something that we've used as a holding tank, not when we're guessing, but like as an example, when somebody had a big amount of money and they wanted to dollar cost average into the market, I would often use a Ginnie Mae fund to dollar cost average out of it, full well knowing it's a little bit volatile. So to answer Candace's question that neither one of us want to answer, I would say a Ginnie Mae if you've got like 3 years. Of that. Good stuff. Good controversial stuff, OG. Lots of questions. Thanks for your questions. If you've got a letter for the show, send those to me, joe@stackingbenjamins.com.
Hey, everyone. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. Welcome to what the critics widely call the best part of the show. And can you blame them? My trivia. In honor of today's all letters episode, how about if I drop this little U.S. post office nugget on you? Here's the question. Who was the first Postmaster General of the U.S. Post Office?
Hey, Stackers. It's time in the show for us to help you solve your money problems. First of all, if you're somebody with a bunch of credit card debt, you've got to change that behavior. Let's work on changing it. The first thing we have to do is get open. And we asked Nick Clement, the CEO of Magnify Money, head to stackingbenjamins.com/Magnify Money to reach them, why people don't talk about their credit card debt.
I know. I wish we would. If you remember when you're in school and you look left and you look right, and one of these people will. Well, one of these people will have credit card debt, and it probably will be you at some point in your life. And because we don't talk about it, because we're so ashamed, we're so embarrassed, what we end up doing is nothing. We stay put. We don't come up with a plan to get out of it. We don't negotiate better deals and refinance. And so it just becomes this horrible, quiet problem that can make someone feel awful. You shouldn't be ashamed. Almost, you know, one out of two people have it. Speak up. And only when you talk about it and deal with it can you get out of the problem.
So, of course, we don't talk about it. But you know what? If you don't hold yourself accountable, you'll get nowhere. Then once you decide that it's time to make things better, head to stackingbenjamins.com/magnify money for not just better credit card options with 0% interest rates to help surf your debt to lower rate, but also for better savings accounts and checking accounts. And if the change you're trying to create in your life is to buy a new home and you've got a high credit score, guess where you should go? StackingBenjamins.com/SoFi. That's S-O-F-I. And as we've talked about before, you go to SoFi because of their incredibly low rates and their easy system of getting approved for loans. You'll know in most cases within 10 minutes. But we asked Dan Macklin exactly what types of loans they have on mortgages.
SoFi offers a 30-year fixed and a 15-year fixed and a 7-1 adjustable rate mortgage. The key difference with our mortgages is we require as little as 10% down payment on those mortgages. So you may only have 10% of the purchase price, and that can be good enough for SoFi. And importantly, we don't charge any mortgage insurance. So for many people who haven't yet saved up a huge down payment, we're a great option.
StackingBenjamins.com/SoFi, S-O-F-I. When your change in your life is either a new house, refinancing student loans, or taking out a personal loan to get rid of debt.
Hey, trivia fans, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and it's time for me to answer some of that delicious fan mail you've sent me over the last few weeks. This one comes to us from Denise. She says, "Hey, where's my $37.50 for that half hour in the Arby's parking lot?" Whoops, wrong Doug. How about this one? Let's try this one here. "Dear Doug, Gertrude moved out of this nursing home months ago. Please stop sending those pictures. They make the whole staff uncomfortable." Okay, well, maybe we can't find a letter from me. So let's just get back to your trivia answer. Before the break, I asked, who was the first Postmaster General of the Post Office? The answer, of course, the man of the hour who served between July 26, 1775 and November 7, 1776 as Postmaster General was none other than Benjamin Franklin. Let's see if we can stack one more Benjamin fact in here. After his stint as Postmaster General, he went on to become an ambassador to France until 1785, 2 years after the American Revolutionary War ended. He's also the only founding father to sign all four important documents of America's founding: the Declaration of Independence, the Treaty of Alliance with France, the Treaty of Paris, and the United States Constitution. How about that for a story, huh? Doug's got you covered at the water cooler today, don't I? See ya!
Bam! Nice job on that one.
I got it.
Yeah, good work. Ben Franklin. Nice job.
Hey, it's nice that we let him use his name.
That's right.
Yeah. Let him borrow it from the show.
Yeah, for $37.50. Hey, let's throw out the Haven Lifeline, tackle some of life's, or rather life insurance's, most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency, they're disrupting the life insurance industry by focusing on those two things that you value most, your family and your time. They were the first life insurance startup that's also backed by the industry giant MassMutual to create a high-quality, affordable term life insurance policy that you can purchase entirely online. And qualified healthy applicants can even skip the medical exam. How about that? Head to stackingbenjamins.com/havenlife now to get a free quote and learn about life insurance the modern way. That's stackingbenjamins.com/havenlife. You can go right to Haven Life, OG, but if you use our link, then you tell them that we sent you. And if the sponsor ain't happy, ain't nobody happy, right?
I agree with that. Or if Doug ain't happy.
Or if Doug, that's probably even more apropos. Today, we're throwing out the Haven Lifeline to our new friend, Clayton. Say hello, Clayton.
Boys, this is Clayton. I'm from Chicago. Got a question based on how much I have in my savings. So I have $18,000 in my savings account. Wondering where I should put this towards. I am 25 years old, as of a couple of days ago. And I have $70,000 in student loans with a 5% interest rate. Wondering if I should put some of that $18,000 from my savings into my student loans to get this paid off quicker, or if I should put this towards my Roth IRA that I have, or the IRA that I have with my company in which my employer matches 3%. What do you guys recommend? I love listening to the show and keep up the good work. Thanks.
Hey, thanks for the call, Clayton. OG, lots of good stuff there. Having $18,000 in savings is a good deal.
Hey, Clayton, a couple of things. Firstly, definitely contribute to your workplace sponsored employer plan there, your 401k or whatever you got. If they're giving you away 3% free money, and get you some of that action. So before night falls, if you haven't contributed or if you haven't signed up for that plan, you should do that immediately. The rest of it is really kind of dependent on where you stand from cash reserves. So just like our question from a little bit ago, I love the fact that you got 18 grand in the bank. I don't know that I would bleed that down to zero, because by having all this cash reserve, you're done with that. You've accomplished one of the initial hurdles that for whatever reason seems to be the hardest hurdle for people to get to, which is a really good cash reserve. And when you've got a really good cash reserve, you never have to worry about emergencies. You never have to worry about, an opportunity that comes up. You never have to worry about getting into consumer debt ever again, because you've got this big cash reserve that gives you all this flexibility. So I don't know that I would take all of it and apply it to debt, which, by the way, is where I would go with it next. But if your income suggests that you're overfunded on your cash reserve, so you've got more than that kind of initial 3 months, and you want to take a little off the top, love the idea of paying off the student loans faster. That's going to free up, obviously free up cash flow and save you a whole bunch of money in interest too.
Here's the math that OG and I use kind of shorthand to think about this, Clayton. We have, there's this thing called the risk premium that we kind of evaluate in our head. And I think it's good, OG, for us to kind of go over this. When you said that the interest rate on that loan is 5%, and if we think that over, you know, if you're going to be really conservative, you could probably over longer periods of time use a really conservative estimate of 8% on stocks. But stocks are going to be kind of volatile. So then I look at the 5% that you get for free, right? That's a free rate of return by paying that toward the student loans versus the 8% you get in stocks. The risk premium really isn't high enough for us to say, take that money and invest it. But when you add that 3% match on top of the 8 to the retirement plan at work, now we're at 11, right? Now the risk premium is difference is high enough that's why I think OG says do the retirement money first, make sure you keep flexibility with the cash reserve second, and then pay down the debt third, because paying down the debt beats, you know, you talked about maybe funding your Roth IRA. So that's, I think, the way that we think about it.
Yeah. You said a much more succinctly intelligent answer than me, but we came to the same conclusion.
No, you came up with the answer. I just wanted to, sometimes people want to just know how we think, you know, and really it's become for you and I just math shorthand. And
yeah,
I think if people can learn that math, it's not that hard. Hey, if you've got a question for the Haven Lifeline, send that to this URL, stackybenjamins.com/voicemail. Or if you just go to the front page, it's really easy to get to the Haven Lifeline. If you just go to stackingbenjamins.com, I'll tell you what you're going to find there. Right along the top, you'll see show questions with a question mark. Click on that link and you'll see leave a voicemail on the Haven Lifeline down at the bottom of that page. Just click it. And as long as you got a microphone hooked up to your computer like Clayton did, it's very easy. stackingbenjamins.com/voicemail. Or if you want to send me a letter, it's joe@stackingbenjamins.com. Also, OG's taking clients, and if you're somebody that thinks, you know what, I could do a lot better than I'm doing now, and I need a good person in my corner, if that person's not available, then reach out to OG. StackyBenjamins.com/OG. You didn't like that one?
I thought it was funny. Well played.
StackyBenjamins.com/ letter O and letter G. And that'll just lead you to OG's calendar, and I'll have a conversation with you about what it takes to get him in your corner. Thanks to everybody who's listened to the show, who's referred us to a friend. It is gratifying. Just today, I was on Twitter and a gentleman said that he just found the show, and he said he just absolutely loves the show. So love it when somebody new comes to the show. In fact, I retweeted it and said, we've been waiting for you. What took you so long? So why'd you take so long getting here? We've had all these years of shows. He's got to now go back through the back catalog and catch up on all the stuff that he missed. Right, right. All right, Doug, take it from here, man. What did we learn today? Let's go Stacks and Benjamins.
Well, everyone, what did you learn today? Probably nothing, so let me help you out. Gather around, and Uncle Doug's going to tell you a story. First, your advisor making lots of trades? Maybe you should follow that paper trail and just check up a little on what your advisor might be up to. Second, Jamie Wise says the crowds are looking at the market a little differently on social media than they have in the past. Should that be a reason to change your investments? Probably not, but it might be a good time to make sure your asset allocation is securely in place. But the big lesson? Make sure you have the right address when sending me your fan letters. I know you've sent thousands, but apparently there's like some mail service delivery issues. I don't know. Maybe that big Amazon internet outage thing a couple of weeks ago impacted it. I'm sure that's all tied together. I'll bet that's it. Special thanks to you for your letters today. Send mail to joe@stackingbenjamins.com. But better yet, send us a Haven Lifeline call to stackingbenjamins.com/voicemail. Mom's a big fan of people who call into the show. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC. The show is created by Joe Saul-Sehy, produced by Richie Rutter-Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor. Special thanks to Joe's mom for bringing scented candles down to the basement. Nothing says podcasting with a bunch of dudes like scented candles.
Man, I've watched some great TV lately, and I can't wait to get to television. But yesterday we went and saw a movie, one that probably a lot of people are interested in. Got a very good Rotten Tomato score, like over 90%, I think 95%. Ooh. This is a Hugh Jackman movie about Wolverine called Logan.
Is not the same as it was. Mutants. They're gone now.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. Beneath the stains.
She's like you.
Of time.
Very much like you.
The feelings disappear.
She needs our help.
You are
someone to come along.
Someone has come along.
I am still right here.
And the she that she is talking about is this young girl that this woman is trying to bring to them. The two voices that you hear are Hugh Jackman plays a part of Wolverine. If you don't know who Wolverine is, you've missed a ton of X-Men movies because he's been around for a long time. And generally, Wolverine movies are my favorite Marvel movies. Like I really like them. I think I like him, number one, because he isn't, you know, mutants are all over the place, but he wasn't born a mutant. He had this stuff stuck in his arms, right? Stuck in his hands. So he's not a natural mutant. He's a guy that now lives his life of misery because he's got this these things inside of his hands. So he makes him a really empathetic character, and you can also see why he's angry all the time. The other voice is Patrick Stewart, who plays the part of Professor X. He's the guy who's been in charge of the X-Men. And as you can hear there now, he's really old. And both he and Wolverine are both beaten down characters. Professor X, early in the movie, you find out that he's taking all this medication to make sure that he doesn't do his mind warp thingy that just paralyzes everybody around him because he has seizures and he just his mutant power automatically goes off. You also hear them talking there about a girl, and there's a woman who's been chasing them around at the beginning of the movie, trying to get them to take this girl. And you learn very quickly that, as you heard there, they said she's a lot like you. You learn she's a lot like Logan. She is a ton like him. Very young. Looks like she doesn't speak. And so that's the beginning of the movie. Of course, the plot's a little predictable. Bad guys come. They're going for the girl, too. He's got to take the girl to safety. And these bad guys are in the way, and chaos ensues. I can't figure out, dude, why this movie got a 95%.
Oh, thank God. Okay, good.
Because I thought it was boring. I was never invested. I usually love Wolverine movies. I was not invested ever in the movie. There's just a ton of blood. There is a ton of the grossest bloodshed. More than two heads are chopped off, and you see the head rolling around on the ground in the person's face. At least two, probably three, maybe four of those. Lots of, you know, Wolverine has those spikes that come out of his hands. Lots of those directly to the face and blood spurting out all over the place. I was grossed out. I didn't care about the plot. I didn't care what happened. I got done and I said, God, it was just gory and boring. Those are the two things I'd use to describe that movie. By the way, I'm starting to think that ratings are manipulated. I don't want to sound like some conspiracy
theory. Cinemark.
I usually laugh at conspiracy theories, as you know, but I've got a good reason for this. I was listening to a video game podcast the other day, and this video game dude, it was the IGN Xbox podcast, and the main guy, Ryan McCaffrey, on the show, he has reviewed these games. As you know, Metacritic score is something that they take the average of all the critics and they put it together, and they do the same thing for movies, right? So they're reviewed very similarly. Ryan McCaffrey, there's this new game that came out called Ghost Recon. The last like three or four Ghost Recon games, he said on the show, he's like, I rated the first one a 9. I rated the second one a 9. I rated the third one a 9. I rated the fourth one a 9 on a scale of 1 to 10. And they said, oh, but you didn't like this one. So what'd you rate this one? Like a 6? He goes, you know, I didn't review it. I didn't review it. And then I went, if you're a video game reviewer or if you're a movie critic and you get free tickets to the movies and you're working with one of these big companies, if you think you're going to give a negative review, I could totally see the person from the movie studio saying, hey, OG, so what'd you think of that movie? Didn't really like it. Hey, would you mind just saying nothing? Would it be okay if you just didn't review it at all? Would that be all right by you?
I see what you're saying. You're saying that they're weeding out
the bad reviews.
The bad reviews to keep the numbers high. Interesting. I have noticed that video game reviews, when they specifically video game reviews, when they show them, they're always like super high.
Yes.
And you go, how is that? Like, there's not anybody. Half the world doesn't think that the 17th edition of Call of Duty is a little over the top. Right. I mean, I played the first 5 minutes of it and I was like, this is so ridiculous. We're in space floating around and my bullets like aren't, this is dumb. Next.
I've actually heard from everybody that one's pretty good, by the way. I do not like Call of Duty games, but I heard the story in that game is good. I heard that the action's good. I heard it's different and it's fun. But anyway, this guy just said
I didn't review that one.
This game, this Ghost Recon. No, it's called Ghost Recon. This Ghost Recon game, I can't figure out if he's reviewed the last four games and he's given them each a 9 and he says he doesn't like this one. Why is he not reviewing it? I mean, that's where my whole conspiracy theory comes from. I'm like, I think the maker of that game just said, hey, would you mind just saying nothing? That'd be great. And that, you know, then that artificially keeps that
Ubisoft
score high.
Has had a couple of problem children lately, so it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, no.
A little
anyway.
Overpromise and underdeliver in their category. So not a big fan of this.
See Logan.
You know, I've never seen any of the X-Men movies. I've never seen any Wolverine movies. I know nothing about him except he's got like knives sticking out of his hands.
Yeah.
How it happened or why it happened is inconsequential.
I have really liked him. He's angry all the time, which becomes funny. It becomes part of his character. He's really an empathetic character. I've really felt a lot in those movies. I've always thought that they're great. And Cheryl and I walked out and went, yeah, that was not worth 2 hours. Yeah. And by the way, you know, Marvel movies have that thing at the end. A lot of us waited all the way through the end credits and the lights just came up. There was no trailer at the end. There was a trailer at the beginning for Deadpool, which was hilarious for the next Deadpool coming. There's a guy being, and I'll tell you this because it's the first 2 seconds of the movie and it's hilarious. There's a dude. Did you see the last Deadpool?
Have not.
Oh, hilarious movie. Hilarious.
R-rated.
Hilarious, R-rated, super violent. Do not take kids. But they always break the fourth wall too. He's always talking to the people watching the movie. And so there is a guy being held up, an old man with groceries, and he's being held up by a guy at gunpoint. And Ryan Reynolds, who's Deadpool, he's just walking along with a hoodie on. He's like, oh, not on my watch. He runs over to a telephone booth and he gets in the telephone booth and he's trying to put on his outfit, his superhero outfit. And you see his bare ass through the up against the thing as he's trying to get the thing on. And you hear the yelling and screaming and he just gets it on. You hear pop, pop, pop. And he's like, oh, no. And he comes out and the crook has run away. And has gotten the stuff and the old guy's sitting there, lying there dead with his groceries and there's blood all over the place. And Deadpool's like, yeah, it just took me too long. I'm sorry, man. I shouldn't have taken so long to get my suit on. He goes, but the bigger question is why the hell is there a telephone booth over there? Didn't those go away in like 1998? And then he lays his head down on the dead guy's body and he starts pontificating about stuff. And it's a little grotesque, but it's very Deadpool and very funny.
Okay.
Yeah, good stuff. All right. I think that's going to do it. See everybody back here on Friday, except you, OG. We'll see you back here on Monday.
Okay, buddy. See ya.
Go Stacks and Benjamins. Bye-bye.